Welcome to episode 318 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing Canadian writer-director Brandon Rhinus, who just completed a comedy feature called Hot Box. We dig into the writing of the script and also the actual production and how he was able to put this project together and get it produced. Brandon was on the podcast before in episode 225, so definitely check that out if you haven't already listened to it. So stay tuned for that interview with Brandon. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast, and then just look for episode number 318. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I'll teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. Specifically, I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I'm interviewing Canadian writer-director Brandon Rhinus. Here is the interview. Welcome, Brandon, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me again.
Thanks, Ashley. I'm glad to be back on.
So you were on the podcast almost 2 years ago, if you can believe it, episode number 225. I will direct people to that if they want to know a little bit more about your backstory. But just to give a quick introduction, you are a Canadian filmmaker, Canadian screenwriter who's living and working in Canada, and you have a new movie out called Hot Box, and that's going to be kind of the focus of the interview today. But I definitely would encourage people to check out episode number 225, because in that episode, we really dug into sort of your origin story and really how you got your kind of career going, all while living far from Los Angeles. So maybe to start out, you can give us a quick pitch. Or a log line. What is your new film Hot Box about?
It's basically takes place over one night. There's multiple intersecting storylines that take place at this big house party. And a good chunk of the movie takes place in a car in the garage where people go to smoke weed, hot box the car, and kind of everything at some point interconnects in this car, but it basically takes place one giant house, and there's God, I don't know how many different storylines, but you know, there's every different people. There's some goth people, there's some, you know, young teenagers or some older guys, and kind of everything kind of mixes up, and it's hilarious if you ask me.
Good. So where did this idea come from? What was sort of the kernel of an idea? Like, what, why this story?
Well, basically I was looking for something that would be relatively simple to do. I had done one feature previously called Cold Comfort, which was like 95% one person locked in a room. So I wanted to keep it along this, you know, the same lines to keep, you know, budget down. So the original plan was 100% of the story was going to be in this car. So all I need for location was a car and then actors. As I started writing it, that was kind of, you know, it wasn't a lot to work with. And my career was kind of building, and I knew a lot more people and had more resources. So I was like, you know what, it doesn't have to be all in a car. We could have some of it in the house, a little bit. And by the time it was done, it ended up being kind of like, you know, 70, 80% in the house and 20% in the car. But it all just came from wanting to do something simple that I could do. And it just kind of, as the script, as I wrote it, it kind of ballooned into a bigger and bigger project. By the end, I think we had like 58 speaking roles. There's over 100 people involved in the production, and it kind of just took on a life of its own. It became bigger than, you know, I was expecting. And, you know, even to this day, I'm surprised that, you know, we actually pulled it off, because it's like, man, so many things could have gone wrong. But we even finished a day early. I think we had 12 shooting days planned, and we ended up finishing in 11. Which even wow. Back, it's like, how do we ever do that? You know, you know, it's just kind of everything came together, and it was such a perfect shoot. But yeah, that's how kind of it all came about, is just wanting to do a simple story and building from there.
So why a stoner comedy as opposed to, you know, a thriller or a horror or something along those lines? What was your thinking with that?
Well, pretty much everything I'd done up to that point, I was known as a horror and thriller guy. Even my dad, when you at the Hotbox premiere, he's like, "Oh, I'm surprised you're funny. I thought you only did horror." I was like, "Well, no, I could do a lot of different stuff, but I do have a knack for comedy, I think, or so people tell me." And I was just, you know, doing one horror after another, and I was like, "Well, I kind of want to show people I can be funny too." And as far as I know, there's not a lot of like stoner comedies out these days. You know, there's Cheech and Chong, but that was decades ago, and you know, you get the odd one that pops up, but it's not really a popular thing. So it seems. But it seems like, oh, there's a lot of people that would like that kind of thing. So I was like, you know what? Like, especially up here in Canada, like, I don't even know if there's another one in the whole country, as far as I know. So I was like, well, let's do one. Let's just make this hilarious thing and, you know, make it ridiculous and see what people think. And then, you know, as far as I know, it seems to have worked.
Good, good. So let's talk about your writing process a little bit. You started out with sort of an idea to be super, super contained, and then it eventually, you know, branched out a little bit from there. Just some quick questions. What was your writing schedule like with this? Was this something that you just sat down and wrote quickly? Did you spend a lot of time outlining it? Maybe just walk us through sort of the process of getting this script developed.
Yeah, this one is actually a little bit different than I usually do it. I remember it kind of, like I had the idea kind of, you know, in my head a little bit. And I went to, there was a meeting, it was like an industry meeting about how to raise money through crowdfunding. So I went to this meeting, and it was a couple hours long, and it was kind of boring. So everyone's sitting there paying attention, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden ideas started coming to me. So I'm sitting there scribbling notes, and you know, everyone's probably like, "Man, this guy is really paying attention." And I was like, "No, man, I'm just brainstorming ideas for Hotbox." So I was sitting there, and you know, by the time I had like 6-7 pages of just like, you know, just funny ideas, just funny dialogue things, different storylines. So I took those home and I finally nailed it down to like, these are the story, ongoing storylines that are going to happen. And these are the kind of things that will happen. And I kind of built up it's like a little bit of an outline around that. And I pounded out the script like pretty damn quick. Like it could have been more than a few weeks at most. And for this one, I kind of wanted, because I mean, comedy is such a subjective thing. And, you know, the last thing I want is to make a movie and I'm the only one that finds it funny. So I got together some people that I knew that were funny and whose, you know, writing and creative skills I respected. They all came over to my place. I think it was maybe 7 or 8 of us. And we read through the whole script. They kind of gave me feedback and, you know, just kind of, you know, it's kind of like a punch up meeting. And they were like, "Well, what if we threw this joke in here? Or, you know, this part's not as funny. What if we did this instead?" And some of the stuff that ended up in the movie came from that meeting. So I used the kind of notes we got from that group and I rewrote the script. And yeah, that was basically it. We were kind of changing the script up until, you know, basically even while we were shooting. But we pretty much had something solid before, like, you know, well before we got into that.
Yeah, yeah. Was your intention always to shoot it? Was this something you showed to any producers? Like, did you try and just get it out there and maybe potentially just sell it as a writer?
No, this was, I do that with a lot of other scripts. This one, I don't think anyone outside the cast or crew has ever read it. I wrote this knowing I'm going to do this myself. And yeah, no one else. I never tried it anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned that this was an ensemble piece. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how you approach screenplay structure with an ensemble piece. It seems like, you know, the sort of more structured, you know, act break on 25, act break on 75 becomes a little dicier when you've got multiple storylines. Maybe talk a little bit about that, how you were able to weave in all these different storylines and just how did you approach the structure? What was sort of your idea going into it about structure?
Yeah, this one was very, very different considering my previous script had been kind of one on-screen character. So this one, I threw the rules out the window. And I even said, I think I've said, you know, just the kind of the interviews I was doing before the premiere, that it's probably going to piss a lot of, you know, creative writing teachers and, you know, screenwriting people off just because it doesn't follow the rules like that, and it really couldn't. There's a few scenes that kind of just pop up and then there's like a hilarious scene and then it goes nowhere. You just never, you know, you see those characters around a bit, but it was just that one part that they were in. There's a few parts like that, but I did kind of have an outline because I didn't, you know, you had to worry about sticking, like forgetting about one storyline for too long. And then people are kind of like forget about it. And even when we had our kind of punch up meeting, people are like, that has been like way, it's been, you know, 40 minutes since we've seen these guys. We got to put that scene earlier, add something in. And so it was kind of juggling around like that. And a lot of it comes down to the comedy pacing too. It's like, well, if we cut away from the story for too long, it gets less funny. So we have to stick to it. But that means we're putting this other thing off. So maybe we have to move that to before. And so there's a lot of juggling it around, trying to figure it out. A lot of the times I do the, you know, the index card thing. For this one, I didn't. People were telling me, like, you should get colored index cards, different colors for each storyline. And I was like, no, I think that would confuse me more. And there was, during the writing process, there was a lot of, I'm just like, man, this is not working. Like, it's, there's too much going on. It's like, it's just too convoluted. And, but I finally just started trimming it down, and I got, you know, I shortened the length, and I was like, okay, now it's working. And even while I was editing, I was like, you know what, I'm looking at it differently. We got to move these scenes around. We got to cut this part. And I was even kind of arguing with my co-producers, because there's parts that they liked, but I'm like, you know what, it's not that funny, and it gets in the way. And so I was kind of juggling things around, and I think the final order we got it all in really worked. But usually my writing's much more concise. Like, it's very, very tight. This one, given the nature of the film itself, I think I can get away with a lot more. I mean, no, you know, stoner person that likes that kind of thing is going to watch it and criticize the pacing because I didn't have the first act break on page 25. You know, I think as long as it's funny, and it is fast paced, and I cut out any second, it was even like 90% funny. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to cut it just to make sure everything is as funny as it could actually be. And it just, like, the pace is really quickly, but it was a different exercise in writing for sure.
Mm-hmm. So the final movie was about 85 minutes, and it sounds like you did a lot of cutting in the editing room. How long was the script? How many pages was the script?
100 pages.
Just roughly. I'm just curious.
Yeah, it might have been 100. It might have been 110. It was longer than I knew. It was if it was fast enough, it would. The final film would be shorter than the page length. Mm-hmm. But I think the original, like the first cut of the movie was like 100, it was like 95. It was way too long. So we ended up having to cut a bunch of scenes and cut a bunch of stuff. And it started getting down to like a more reasonable length. I finally got it down to 90 minutes. And I think it was like the day before the premiere. I was watching it and I was like, it's still not good enough. So I remember I called one of my co-producers, Julie Whalen, and I was like, what do you think about cutting the scene with Simon and Luce and Lacey in the car and this other part? She's like, do it. She's like, I was even thinking the same thing. Those parts aren't that funny. So we cut those, got it down 85 minutes. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, now I'm satisfied with it because I didn't want any parts in the theater where I kind of cringe because it wasn't what I wanted. There's a few parts like that anyway that just didn't work out as well as I wanted. But I wanted it to be like just absolutely as most excellent as it could be. And I find that having anything that's like shorter and tighter, I find works better. That's kind of stuff I'm a fan of. And that's, my work got a lot better once I started really editing myself in both, you know, video editing and in script editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about genre requirements? You know, there's certainly a history of stoner films about people in their 20s. Did you go back and watch some of those? You mentioned Cheech and Chong, but, you know, Half-Baked. There's a good number of these films that have come out over the years. Were there some tropes that you wanted to subvert? Were there some tropes you wanted to sort of play into? Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, sort of where this fits in the pantheon of stoner comedies.
Yeah, I didn't rewatch those movies when it came time to do Hot Box. I've seen most of those before, Half Baked. You know, I like them all. It's a lot of it that I found was like they're still fairly big budget movies. It's still Hollywood's take on the kind of thing that I don't think they really understand. Whereas this, it's kind of like, even though the movie is ridiculous, it's not. I wouldn't say it's realistic by any stretch of the imagination, but it's more. I'm like, this is good. Going to be more along the lines of my experience and just the kind of things that I know. So I tried to avoid any tropes or anything like that you've seen 1,000 times. I kind of wanted to do things differently, and I wish I could think of some off the top of my head, but I just went off beat on anything. It's like, this is what other people would do. I'm going to do this. And I even caught myself a few times when I was writing and I was like, nah, this is way too obvious of a joke. I'm going to go the other way. And basically have fun with it. I also want it to be a lighthearted thing. I mean, there's a little bit of sex and a lot of swearing, but it's still a lighthearted story. I didn't want to get too crude. I like American Pie and all those kind of movies, but a lot of the newer comedies, I just find they're a bit too, crude, I guess would be the word. I'm just not such a big fan of it. So for this, it was like, I'm going to make this the kind of comedy that I would want to watch. And it was a big gamble because maybe no one agrees with me and, I'm the only fan of the movie. So there was a little going into it, but I was kind of like, is this funny? And basically, on set, people were laughing. We kept having ruining takes because people were laughing at the jokes. I kind of knew we were onto something, but it wasn't until we were in the actual theater and people were just, laughing throughout the whole thing that I was like, okay, I did my job, and it kind of proves that I was right. That this, at least some people are going to find this hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so you went through this development process. You wrote this script. You knew you were going to shoot it. What was that next step? Were you already in touch with these producers? How did you guys go about raising the money? How did you get the producers involved? And then ultimately, how did you guys go about raising the money to shoot this?
For a while, we had something like 6 or 7 kind of co-producers. They were all people I'd done previous projects with, or people that I had met. And we were working on it, and it's been a while now. I can't exactly remember what happened, but things kind of held us up. And I remember we had a plan to shoot it in September, which is kind of the last warm month before winter hits up here. And it just, things stalled, and I was super busy with other stuff, and a bunch of the producers kind of backed out because they were busy. And a couple of them were like, when we postponed it, they kind of took it as, I don't have the means, the ability to pull it off. So I was kind of like, all right. So I was pretty much left on my own. It was me and Lindsay Christopher were what the only ones left. But I had recently been hired to direct a short film by Julie Whalen. And she was the writer and producer on it. I was surprised. She was super organized and just awesome in every way you could imagine. So I was like, hey, Julie, you want to, come on board and help produce this? And she was like, well, I might be able to help out a little bit. And of course, she ended up just practically running the show. I could not have done it without her. So it ended up being just the three of us. And I was like, okay, we're going to do this in November. It might be freezing freaking cold, but it's a summer we're going to have to deal with. We ended up moving a whole bunch of outside scenes indoors just because, our first AD is Brandon, it's too damn cold. Actors aren't going to want to stand outside. So we ended up, there's a whole bunch of scenes that were supposed to be outside that we moved inside. And from there, we just basically hit the streets doing everything we could. We did some crowdfunding, raised a bit of money that way. We had a few people kind of donate money. Lindsay, Christopher, and I put in a few thousand of our own. And we basically just had to use all our resources. And I've met a lot of people filmmaking up here. And we just had to borrow whatever we want, the car in it. We found this kind of cool 1970s station wagon. It kind of looks like the Ghostbusters car. There's a guy up here we know, Steve Sang, who he's like a car enthusiast, and he had that, and he basically gave it to us for a month. He's like, yeah, sure, I'll park the car out there, didn't charge us anything. The city of Edmonton, where I live, they had this kind of mansion house that was on city property. No one lived there. There's not even any running water, but they were like basically gave it to us. So as long as you have insurance. And we had to rent porta potties, but they're like, yeah, go ahead and use the house. So we had this insanely big, nice house to use at no cost. People just kind of started chipping in everything. We needed to, there's no furniture in this house. And this is an 8-bedroom house. There was not a piece of furniture. So a bunch of, the cast and crew donated their own furniture. We put ads out on Facebook, if anyone has any couches that they don't want, you want to get rid of them, we'll come borrow them and then, take them to the dump later. So we spent this whole day driving around in a big U-Haul truck, picking up furniture for people. They're getting rid of stuff, brought into this house. And then next thing you know, it's like, hey, we got this fully furnished house. And of course, when it was done, we had to go and, take them to Goodwill or take them to the dump or whatever. But of course, by the time we finished shooting, we built up such a reputation. Everyone, this is a pretty big project for the city. And word was out about it. And next thing you know, people are kind of just, hey, I'll put in $500. I'll put in this. And, other people were putting in larger sums just to help us get it finished. And people were bringing in food to help feed the crew so we could save on food budget. And it was definitely everyone helped out in every way they could. People brought donuts, bought McDonald's, we needed empty beer cans and stuff. So people brought those in and, some companies donated pizza and that kind of stuff. And so we ended up it was a lot of work, but we just, somehow made it happen. And part of that was my commitment, because I originally postponed it. It was like a little bit of self-doubt. I was, you know, like, can I really do this? It's coming up too soon. But when we set the second date, I was like, I can't postpone it again. So I'm like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm hell or high water. If we have the money or not, like, we're doing it. I'm just going to basically, you know, dive in and just make it happen. And luckily everyone was on board. Everyone was supportive. I mean, we were dealing with, you know, terrible road conditions, and some days were like blizzards that people had to drive through, and, you know, people went into the ditch and we had to go drag their vehicles out and just, but it's like, no matter what came up, we just fought our way through it and got it finished. And, you know, it was amazing.
Yeah. So take me back to this house. How did you even hear about this house? Like, just, I'm just always curious, just how did something like that come up? How did you even know to even ask about it?
Well, it was, we kind of have another filmmaker here in our city, Michael Charnay. We got him to thank for it. We were shooting another project where we needed a particular house, and we found this. It was like a historical house in the city. So we called the city to ask, like, if we want to film in there, like, who do we talk to? So they gave us a contact of, you know, this person, and they came and showed us this house, and the guy showed us these other properties. Like, well, if you want to shoot, you know, and he showed us a few different places, one of them being the Hot Box House. And the Hot Box House is actually where we shot Cold Comfort, which was my, you know, one actor, one location thing. It has this one really, this room that's like 35 feet long and like 7 feet wide. It just has this kind of weird looking room, and we filmed the entire movie in there. So by that point, we already knew of this location. So when it came time, we need a big house. And it's like, well, they let us shoot there before. Like, they'll probably let us use the whole house instead of just that one room. So we made that connection there. But yeah, the city was great for letting us to do that.
And is there any stipulations on this? You just have to have insurance, but do they, you know, want you to promote them? Do they want you to make a donation to some charity? I don't know. There's nothing like that.
No, it's Edmonton's a fairly big city, but it's not, we're not Vancouver. We're not LA. Like, there are filmmakers here, but it's not like a booming place. And I mean, even my buddies in Vancouver, like, you know, we want to shoot in a park and the city wants like $1,500 an hour. And whereas here, like, they're very open for that kind of stuff. And I was kind of like, really? Like, it's like, what's the catch? Like, we don't got to pay for it. And they're like, no, as long as you have the insurance and, you know, you have to, you know, don't wreck anything. Basically gave us the key, and, you know, they were super helpful. And we even, like, they let us shoot in a cemetery for nothing, and, you know, for another project. Mm-hmm. And like, the city is great. And, you know, people always ask me, like, why don't you move to LA, move to Vancouver? And I was like, man, Hot Box would have cost me like freaking $8 million if I did it in LA. You know, I could do it here for, you know, like such a small amount. Like, so people are, it's just like a different atmosphere, I think. I mean, I've never honestly made a film anywhere else.
Yeah.
Just from what I hear, like, we have breaks here because, I mean, in LA, it's like, you probably hear about it all the time. It's, you know, it's what you're known for. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, if you're shooting a movie, it's such a cool and unique thing that not a lot of people do. So people are willing to kind of help out a lot. And I'm really grateful.
So what did your crew look like on this project? Maybe you can just run through what crew positions you had just for our audience.
Yeah, we had, obviously, we had Grace Kinley, a really awesome first AD. We had a DP, Sam Reed. We had a few kind of like camera operators and assistants. Not all of them could work the whole time, and some of them were kind of volunteer, so they couldn't commit to, you know, every day. But they'd be like, you know what, I could put in 3 days or, you know, a little bit. So we kind of juggled them around. We had a lot of people that ended up just kind of helping us out as grips and stuff. And some of them, like Sam Au, who is actually now kind of a main fixture in filmmaking in the city. At the time, I met him because he was dropping off his stepdaughter for a project. And he ended up coming to Hot Box just to be standing in the background. And next thing you know, he ended up helping carry stuff around. Next thing you know, he was doing the slate. And next thing you know, all of a sudden he's there every day. And he's driving to pick people up and helping move furniture. And next thing you know, he's like on the team. So people kind of just helped out. And some days we didn't have a lot of crew. Sometimes we had a bigger crew. You know, but we had obviously like sound. We had all the main parts. We had we had a couple people doing the catering and all the food. And there's, you know, a lot of cross jobs, you know, people were just, you know, kind of doing one thing, but doing another too. Sometimes they'd be acting a little bit, but they'd also be, you know, being a grip on the side. So everyone just kind of helped out, but we had like the main jobs. We had no script supervisor. But yeah, basically, you know, DP, sound, first AD, camera assistant, second AD. We had a third AD on a few days with the busier days. So it was a very tight crew, but everyone kind of pitched in to a certain degree. We had some set decorating, like art people dealing with the props and the furniture and all that.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys use for a camera? What did you shoot this on?
Oh God, I can't even remember. I'm not a tech guy. I honestly, people ask me that all the time, okay. But I should learn.
Where did, and did the DP, did he bring his equipment? So your DP had a camera and lighting and grip and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. His company that he co-owns with some other people, Gorilla Films, they have all their own gear. So basically we paid him and then rented the gear from his company. So yeah, he brought all that stuff in. It was a really nice camera. I just, like, I'm not, it doesn't interest me. Like, so I never know what camera we're using for a shoot, even though I should, but it's kind of embarrassing. But if someone told me the name, I'd probably remember it, but it wasn't like the Red, whatever it's called. It wasn't like that high level, but it was, it was still like a really nice camera.
Yeah. So perfect. I was very impressed with the acting in your film. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. How did you go about casting this? And especially, you know, you just mentioned there was like 58 speaking roles, and just somewhat coincidentally, this morning I literally put out a podcast episode about my own film, The Rideshare Killer, and one of the things I was talking about was the cast, is that if you're in L.A., finding a lot of good actors is very easy, but if you're outside of L.A., you might want to reconsider and kind of keep your cast limited, because you're gonna have a hard time finding quality actors. But I was impressed. You have a lot of speaking roles, and I thought the acting was very good. Maybe you can talk about that process. How did you find these people, and what was that process like?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I mean, there are a lot of actors here, but I mean, nowhere, you know, near compared to LA, obviously. But a lot of people I had worked with before, like some of the main cast, but a lot of them I hadn't. We did extensive like auditioning. We did like video auditions, and we kind of narrowed it down from there to like kind of our top picks. And then we had them come in for actual in-person auditions. And I had Julie and Lindsay, my co-producers, were helping out on that because, you know, I don't mind making the final decision on things, and I have input. I just find the whole auditioning process, like I've never been an actor, and both of them were. And a lot of the times it's like, after I hear the same lines of dialogue read like 70 times, I can't even remember who was who. And so I was like, I need you guys to kind of, you know, run the show, and I'll kind of have some feedback. But it's such a hard decision, because a lot of times it comes down to, we got three people and we absolutely like love them all. So who are we going to pick? And it's like, well, and a lot of it was juggling. Okay, why don't we go with her as this role, but then we'll move her to this role. And then it's like, oh, but that one went. So, okay, we'll put her back in this role. And then, so there's a lot of juggling around. And there's so many people that were originally going to play one role and ended up changing. And a lot of it, too, was the way I had it in my head. And the person we hired did not look like that. So some of it, I was like, no, man, I don't want that guy. Like, he doesn't look like how I imagined it in my head. But they're like, no, he's the best actor. You know? So we ended up, you know, going with some people that I originally didn't think would work, but absolutely did work. And now I can't even imagine it being any way different.
Yeah. So one of the things that comes across as I listen to you is that, you know, it seems like you kind of have a real good support system up there in Edmonton, which is just simply not here. It's a little more doggy dog down here in LA, I would say, because just sort of the things you're running into, a guy that shows up, you know, and just starts pitching in and stuff. That's, you know, that's sort of just friendly, you know, let's get involved. How do you recommend somebody gets involved in sort of a group like you, or just a filmmaking community like being up in Edmonton? If they're a screenwriter, they're looking for a director, they're looking for a producer, they want to get involved in the local community. Maybe you can give some tips on kind of how you broke into it and how you got to know everybody in Edmonton.
Well, it kind of started, I joined a screenwriting group, and I went to a few of the meetings there, and then I joined a filmmakers group, and I met a few people there, and I worked, you know, just on one, I came out as like a grip or something on one short film set. So I met a few people that way, but basically it came down to making my own stuff. And it kind of depends where you're at. Like, if you want to be a filmmaker or director, I'd recommend going my route, which is just, you know, write a script, film, you know, you just put an ads out on Facebook, like, hey, we're shooting this, this movie. It's a 1 or 2 day shoot. We're looking for a cast and looking for crew. People are, you know, save up a little bit of money, and then obviously people are going to come to you and like, hi, I'm a DP, I'm an actor, I'm a sound guy. And then you could, you know, hire them from there. And basically that's how I got to know people. And, you know, the next project, sometimes they wouldn't be available, so there'd be someone else that would come. And so you'd kind of get to know several different DPs and then several different crew positions. And then once you're kind of established a little bit, you just start to, like, you have contacts. So you could ask your DP, like, hey, do you know any other people that, you know, I could, like, any other grips, or I'm looking for this, or I'm looking for a first AD. And, of course, they've worked on other film sets, so they can recommend these other people. And then it kind of grows and grows from there. And then, I mean, and I participate in Facebook groups in whatever city you're in, just kind of see who's doing stuff. And a lot of the times, a lot of people I know start off as an extra. You know, we're shooting at a bar and we just need like 50 people to sit in the background. And someone is just sitting there, and next thing you know, they start chatting with people. So they get to know people, they chat with me. And next thing you know, it's like, hey, they know a few people. And as soon as you do that, then people are like, oh, hey, next weekend there's another shoot going on, you know, down wherever, you want to come along? So they kind of go to that. And the next thing you know, you kind of meet more people, and just kind of grows from there. So I didn't find it that hard. It's actually kind of fun, too. But if you just throw yourself into the mix and get known, even there's people on Facebook that I just meet because, you know, they like my post or something. I just say, see their name, so I'm aware of them. And then when our paths cross somewhere, I was like, oh, hey, yeah, we know each other from Facebook. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, they're working on something. Next thing you know, they're on your set. And next thing you know, you're teaming up on a project together. And it just comes to basically just putting yourself out there and meeting people and just, you know, constant hustle. Like, I mean, I hustle like nonstop every day. If there's someone to meet, I'll shoot them a message and, you know, just make sure they know who I am and, you know, talk to people. And I do a ton of projects. I mean, like, I've done 3 features just in the last like year and a half, and a whole bunch of shorts, and just meeting people through that. And you could really do it. Like, it must be kind of daunting if you don't know anyone, you've never started, but just whatever city you're in, just type the name of your city and filmmaking group. And if you're in a reasonably big city, there's probably at least a few other people that are doing that kind of thing. So go to the meetings and meet up with them and just see what's going on. And, you know, you could just, hey, you want to get together and shoot something? You know, it just starts with, even if you got to use your phone, just go out and film a little thing, and then just, you know, replicate the process and do it over and over and kind of get better at it. And then next thing you know, you can make money at it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, I just was looking at your IMDb page as I was preparing for this interview, and I think at this point you have over 50 writing credits, number of features, a number of shorts. And I mean, that's very impressive, and I think people should really take note of that. And that goes to a lot of what you're saying is, you just said, oh, I work a lot, I do a lot of this, and people need to look at your IMDb and really understand what that actually means. But do you think that there was a turning point? Like, all these projects you've done, is there any one project you look back at and say, yeah, that was the turning point where things started to click and really take off?
Ooh, yeah, that's a hard question. The first big turning point was when I learned how to edit scripts properly and really tighten them up and make them good, because basically it was like the day or after I kind of learned that skill, or where I considered that my script started selling. It was like right away. I was just like, oh my God. And I just learned how to tighten things up. And I went through every script that I had, did that. And next thing you know, I started selling shorts like pretty quickly. And then I started getting hired, and I started selling features. So that was kind of a big turning point. I'm in Love with a Dead Girl, my short film, which is still to this day my most popular short film. That was another big one, because that was the first time I'd ever worked with a director of photography. It was the first time I'd ever worked on something where I hired and paid a cast and crew. Before that, it was kind of like a bunch of friends get together and, you know, make something, and, you know, we all volunteer. That was the first one where we're doing this for serious. That opened up a lot of doors. And I think, Hot Box would be the next one, because Cold Comfort I did before that, even though it's released late, it's still not completely finished. But that proved a little bit, but Hot Box proved that I could do a full-length movie that's actually pretty damn hard. And with all of that on my shoulders, I can pull it off. So after that, that's when kind of people started, you know, investing in my projects. Before that, it'd be crowdfunding, whereas now people are willing to give, you know, larger sums because they see what I can do, and you know, and it just gets you more attention playing off a bigger project like that. So you kind of always need to be doing bigger things, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So what's next for you? What are you working on now?
I'm still like writing a ton. Like I make my living as a screenwriter, which is not easy being up here. And, you know, they're all kind of, you know, micro budget, low budget things. But mm-hmm. I'm always just, you know, every, you know, constantly jobs come up. I finish them, I get paid, do the next one. And some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. And, you know, I write some comic books too. So I got all that going on. I got I'm Haunted, which was my kind of found footage series. It's a it was 62 kind of short episodes of a few minutes each, and I released them kind of daily over a few months. They're on my YouTube channel. I'm trying to release that as a feature, so I could kind of combine them all into one long movie, and I'm getting that down now. I just finished writing my first novel as well, based on I'm Haunted. And and basically I'm kind of juggling, trying to decide what the next project is. I got some interest, and part of my reason for doing I'm Haunted was that I had these bigger projects we're trying to raise huge sums of money for, and it just takes a while. And I was like, you know what, I don't want to sit around waiting another year. It's like, I want to do another project that I could just fund myself if I have to. So I came up with I'm Haunted because we didn't even really need a crew. It was all done on a phone and a laptop. So basically it was me and the cast. So I raised a little bit of money for that from crowdfunding and stuff, and paid for it, you know, basically myself, and some other people put money in. But it was another way to get my name out there. And even that, like, anytime I do a project, it gets some sort of attention and someone ends up hiring me to write something. You know, someone will watch it on YouTube and they'll be like, oh, hey, I like that. Can you also write, a thriller? Sure. And then, you know, and then they end up hiring me.
You mentioned a minute ago, as you were preparing for production with Hotbox, you moved the date back, and you made the comment there was a little bit of maybe self-doubt. And, you know, I just want to get your thoughts on that. I just completed my feature film, The Rideshare Killer, and, you know, I don't know if people fully realize how much self-doubt is involved in that process. And, you know, it's very, very stressful, and it's not like those, especially the weeks leading up, those 2-3 weeks leading up to production, there's a million things to do. You know, you're forgetting some of that stuff. And so self-doubt is sort of a part of the process. And at least for myself, it's just a matter of trying to ignore it. It's not necessarily an easy thing, but I know that's what holds back a lot of people. It's just that self-doubt. You know, I don't know how to hire a crew. I don't know anything about making a short film. I don't know anything. Like, how do you make that leap? How do you feel like you could help people get across that, that bridge?
It really, yeah, you're exactly right. It comes down to practice. Like, I've somewhat become numb to it. And it still affects you, but like you said, you just ignore it. It's like, yeah, you're full of self-doubt, you're nervous, you don't know if it's going to work, but what are you going to do, just not do it? You know, it's like, you got to do it anyway. So it's kind of like, yeah, whatever, I'm nervous. Go in and do it, and, you know, I got a new project I'm shooting, a pilot coming up in a few weeks, and I'm just like, I'm worried about things, but it's like, you know what, you can't show the cracks of the cast and crew. You got to go into it being like, yeah, this is going to work, it's going to work, I know what I'm doing, and, you know, for the most part, you do, right? It's like, you've done stuff before. You can do this. And, you know, everyone's been through hard times. You can get through it. But it's like, yeah, it's always in the back of my mind. And I think a lot of people, I mean, it's easy just to sit in the theater or, you know, sit at home and watch the film and be like, yeah, I like that, or I didn't like it, or why'd they do this? And, you know, kind of criticize it. But it's like, man, the shit I had to go through just to get this done. Like, it's a miracle it even got finished. So it's the fact that, you know, you're seeing something is like, you know, it is absolutely incredible. Like, whether or not it's any good. Yeah. Beside the point. But I know a lot of people are like that, and I was like that too. Like, I hesitated for years before pursuing this. Just kind of like, you know, what if it doesn't work and all this? And it's like, it just comes down to like, get the courage and just do it. Just start doing something. Write a one-page script and go out and film it. It's probably going to suck, and, you know, your third, fourth, fifth one are probably going to suck too, but eventually you'll start learning, and then they'll start being kind of good. And then just, if you hire good people, you'll maybe acting's not so good, but, you know, it's going to look beautiful because they hired a DP, but then you meet some better actors, and then the acting gets better, and then you become a better writer. And next thing you know, like, you are starting to make some competent stuff that people are watching, and it kind of just, and that everyone, it kind of, it builds like the faith in yourself. You know, it's kind of like, if I can do Hotbox, like, I can do the next one. I'm probably still going to be nervous about it, but it's like, I know I can finish it. and it'll slowly go from there. Like, I couldn't imagine doing like $100 million movie now. Like, that's, you know, that just seems like it's way beyond my capabilities. Like, I'd be so freaking nervous to do that. But I could do the next step, and I could do the next step, and eventually, maybe one day, I'll be, you know, 10 years from now, it'll be like, ah, $100 million movie. Yeah, I can do that. You know, it takes doing it, and it takes doing it even though you're nervous. And I know a lot of people, they ask me all the time, like, how do I get started? Like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And it's like, honestly, anything you don't know, just Google. I do it all the time. Like, I'm going to write a book. And it's just like, I Google a few things and I start writing it. And then I just figure it out. The next thing you know, my book is on its way in the mail. Because I've just built that skill up in myself where it's like, I'm going to do this. And then I pound away at it and I don't stop until it's done. And next thing you know, yeah, I got 50 writing credits on IMDb because I just write something and then I don't stop pitching it until someone pays me and it gets made. So if you just have that kind of, and it builds courage in yourself a lot, right? Like, if you make a short film and then just get done, put it on YouTube, even if people trash it, it's still like, man, I freaking made that. And all of a sudden people kind of treat you different because everyone wants to make a movie. Everyone, you know, everyone says they're writing a script and, you know, it's like, yeah, sure. And 3 years from now, you're still going to be writing the same script. If you can actually get something finished and put it out there, people take you seriously and then be like, hey, I heard you're a filmmaker. I want to be a part of your movie. And if you start doing it consistently, all of a sudden everyone wants to get on board because you can get stuff done and they can be part of something, of making something. You know, no one wants to follow someone who's too scared to get started or, you know, finish something they started. So, so yeah, just like, it's like, yeah, it's going to be nerve wracking. And even probably the biggest Hollywood directors probably still have self-doubt and they make things that they're not happy with. And, you know, people trash their work and it's just something you just deal with and move on to the next project and keep doing it. And you're just going to get better with each one. And hopefully it'll be a fulfilling career.
Yeah. Yeah. So good advice for sure. How can people see Hot Box? What's the release schedule like for it?
We signed a deal with a company. It's supposed to be out on like Amazon Prime and a bunch of video on demand things. They don't have a date set. We're just waiting on, they wanted some last minute art changes. Apparently the poster that up to this point, everyone knows and loves, they thought it looked too much like a horror movie. So they're like, can you make it, you know, look more like a comedy? So we're just having that done, which will hopefully be finished this week, like in the next few days. Then we send that off to them. And then I don't know how long it is from that point to the point where it's on Amazon Prime. I think they said it's like between 10 and 20 days or something like that. Nice. So I'm hoping sometime early March. So keep your eye out on it. But, you know, follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page for Hotbox, or follow me because we'll be announcing it, you know, absolutely everywhere. So you really won't be able to miss it. But yeah, check it out. Let me know what you think. I've got a good reaction so far, but it was, you know, we had two screenings, but it's still not a huge sample of people. So I kind of want to know just what the general public thinks about it. So I'm very interested.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. So that's good. I'll round that link up, the Facebook page for Hotbox. How else can people keep in touch with what you're doing? Do you have a blog, a Twitter account, Facebook, anything you're comfortable sharing? I will also round that up for the show notes just so they can follow along with your career.
Yeah, I have a Facebook page. It's just under my name. And my Twitter is at Brandon Reines. Instagram is the same. I have a blog, although I rarely use it. I haven't used it in a few years. I just a couple days ago wrote a new blog post about another film that I wrote the script for that just got released. So I wrote a blog post about that. You can look up if you want. But yeah, Facebook and Twitter are the best places to get in touch with me. And okay. I have different Facebook pages for various projects too. But you know, if you just start following me and keep in touch, and you know, I like hearing from people and hearing what they think about my projects.
Perfect, perfect. Well, Brandon, again, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck with this film, and I'm sure you'll be back on soon enough with another project to tell us about.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is great.
So thank you, Brandon. We'll talk to you later.
I just want to talk quickly about SYS Select. It's a service for screenwriters to help them sell their screenplays and get writing assignments. The first part of the service is the SYS Select screenplay database. Screenwriters upload their screenplays along with a logline, synopsis, and other pertinent information like budget and genre, and then producers search for and hopefully find screenplays they want to produce. Dozens of producers are in the system looking for screenplays right now. There have been a number of success stories come out of the service. You can find out about all the SYS Select successes by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/success. Also on SYS Podcast podcast episode 222. I talk with Steve Deering, who was the first official success story to come out of the SYS Select database. When you join SYS Select, you get access to the screenplay database along with all the other services that we're providing to SYS Select members. These services include the newsletter. This monthly newsletter goes out to a list of over 400 producers who are actively seeking writers and screenplays. Each SYS Select member can pitch one screenplay in this monthly newsletter. We also provide screenwriting leads. We have partnered with one of the premier paid screenwriting leads services, so I can syndicate their leads to SYS Select members. There are lots of great paid leads coming in each week from our partner. Recently, we've been getting 5 to 10 high-quality paid leads per week. These leads run the gamut. There's producers looking for a specific type of spec script to producers looking to hire a screenwriter to write up one of their ideas or properties. They're looking for shorts, features, TV, and web series pilots, all types of projects. If you sign up for SYS Select, you'll get these leads emailed directly to you several times per week. Also, you get access to the SYS Select forum, where we will help you with your logline and query letter and answer any screenwriting related questions that you might have. We also have a number of screenwriting classes that are recorded and available in the SYS Select forum. These are all the classes that I've done over the years, so you'll have access to those whenever you want. Once you join, the classes cover every part of writing your screenplay, from concept to outlining to the first act, second act, third act, as well as other topics like writing short films and pitching your projects in person. Once again, if this sounds like something you'd like to learn more about, please go to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. Again, that is sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. To wrap things up, I just want to touch on a few things from today's interview with Brandon. I literally recorded the interview with Brandon right after I put out that special podcast episode on my own film, The Rideshare Killer, the one where I talked about the locations. I think it's so interesting what Brandon said about getting the locations and just being involved in film outside of the Los Angeles area. Just really listen to what Brandon is saying in the interview. He was able to get a lot of stuff for free because he wasn't in a city that was used to film production. And that's so important, not just getting the stuff for free, but leaning into the advantages that you have and making the most of them. I've mentioned this before on the podcast. It's so important to try and get everything you can into the film. All these sorts of things add production value. It just adds just another level. On a more general level, I think Brandon is a shining example of how to go about getting your career started from anywhere in the world. He happens to be up in Canada. Definitely go back and check out episode number 225, because again, we really dig into sort of his origin story, how he got started, how he made some of his first sales as a screenwriter. He networked locally. He just, all the stuff that we talk about, this the stuff that people should be doing, he did it and eventually paid off. I love what he said too. He was at this recently. He was at an event where he was able to outline Otbox. It was on Kickstarter or something, or in crowdfunding, and it was boring and things. But again, just that attitude. Even as he's successful and having some traction, he's still trying to learn. He's still trying to go to seminars, network, learn new stuff. And that's just, that's the spirit that that we all need. We all need to do that, myself included. I mean, there's still so much that I have to learn. And sometimes you just get caught up and you kind of just get to a point where you feel like you know it, or you've been there and you've done that. But we can always all learn. We can all learn at whatever level we're at. He's always doing stuff. I really like that. The shorts, even the shorts that don't pay anything or don't pay very much, he's out there doing stuff. And again, listen to what he said. A lot of these no paid or low paid shorts that he's worked on, that he's written, that he's directed, that he's produced, a lot of them led to paid work. Just getting yourself out there. I get so many emails from frustrated screenwriters asking for help. When the help that they need is literally staring back at them in the mirror. The difference between Brandon and everyone else who's not getting films produced, it's not the self-doubt. He has it. I have it. We all have that self-doubt. It's just that he pushes through it. He just keeps pushing ahead, keeps trying to move that ball down the field. And again, listen to what he said. You don't have to start with a feature film. He didn't start with a feature film. This is his first feature film as a writer, director, and a producer. But he's done a bunch of shorts. He's done a bunch of web series. one step at a time. You can't run before you walk, but don't get caught up on that. Maybe it's just about making a 1 minute short with your iPhone or less, maybe just some cool 15 second videos on your phone to start. But just start doing something, getting content made, see how people react to your stuff. Getting it in front of an audience, again, just a 15 second, a 30 second video. Maybe you have a kid that, you know, can do a little acting. You can do a cute little video with that. Maybe you can do something yourself. Maybe you have a friend that's an actor and wants some stuff for the reel. Just doing stuff and then, you know, showing it to your friends, seeing how they react. That sort of feedback is just so important to understanding how writing translate to the actual video or film and how that is actually interpreted by the audience. Like, that's such an important skill, and it's such an important experience that we all need, but for screenwriters it's a difficult experience to have. The other thing that's so apparent in talking to Brandon is that and again this is just so key, is that he genuinely seems to enjoy doing the work at whatever level he can get it made. And that's why we're all here, right? We're all here because we want to do cool projects, we want to be creative, we want to be artists, we want to just work on cool stuff. It's hopefully, anyways, it's not just about the money, it's not just about making, you know, tons of money, winning Oscars, hanging out at swanky, you know, Hollywood Hills parties. Hopefully it's about being creative and just doing the work and enjoying the work. That's the whole point of this, hopefully, anyways. If you've ever read the Sid Field book called Screenplay, if you haven't read it, you definitely should check it out. He has a quote in that book, and it goes something like this: the longest journey starts with the first step. And, you know, it's a quote, it's probably the single biggest thing I took away from that book. But I often remember that, you know, as I have two young kids and I raise them and I see them, their frustration of just, you know, there's a big project and they get lost in the details and they just don't know how to start. And I've quoted that to them so often, that longest journey starts with the first step. You know, just get moving, just get started, and good things can happen. If you enjoy the work, those first steps, they won't be painful. They'll be fun. They'll be creative. And again, that's sort of the whole reason, hopefully, that we all got into this business. Anyways, I really enjoy talking to Brandon. He's just really a shining example of, you know, a hardworking, talented, creative, hardworking guy just making things happen for himself. So I just applaud what he's doing, and I hope everybody really listens to this and, you know, get something out of it. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you for listening.